right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is January 8th, 2026. And the top story this morning is defense stocks. A wild ride for defense stocks over the last 24 hours with some comments from President Trump that sent them reeling yesterday and then shooting much, much higher today. So what the heck is going on with the defense stocks? Well, it started yesterday afternoon when President Trump, in typical fashion, takes to social media and starts lambasting defense contractors for a lack of investment in production capacity. He threatened no dividends, no buybacks, and limits on executive pay if these companies do not start making investments in expanding U.S. defense production. Now, that's interesting. Let's overlook for a second the legality of that whole thing, which is a pretty big thing to overlook, right? You got to kind of hurt your neck to try to look around it, because presidents can't arbitrarily say, you can't buy stock, you can't pay dividends, and here's how much you're allowed to make unless you do what I want. That's a pretty big oversight, but we're going to look right over it. What the heck is going on here? Why would the president say this? Why would he try so hard to force these defense factories to get built? It's because it's the biggest takeaway from what we have learned through the conflict in Ukraine and the conflict in the Red Sea. Right? We have learned that our missiles in particular are highly effective. They are very good, but they're also outrageously expensive and we can't make them fast enough. That last part is vitally important. We just cannot build missiles fast enough. Ships is another one. But missiles is the big one, in particular in the Red Sea, right? None of our ships were hit. They came pretty close, though. And we exhausted years worth of production of our missile stockpile, missiles that would be needed for a theoretical conflict with China. And I maintain to this day, I've never really heard anybody else say it, but I think the way things went in the Red Sea played a huge role in the U.S. decision to essentially take over Venezuela. Because we realized we lacked the defense capacity to both guarantee the flow of oil out of the Middle East and take on China if we need to. We cannot do both. We would have to pick one, which means they could have, Chinese allies like Iran, like the Houthis, could have cut off the flow of oil to the United States in the event of a conflict. I think that is why we went and took over Venezuela. It was absolutely about oil. Now, that being said, trying to force this production, trying to force these factories to get built, American defense producers or, companies like Raytheon, who was targeted in particular, have said, if you want us to build these factories, if you want us to make these investments, you need to order this stuff ahead of time. We're not just going to do this on spec. We're not going to build all these giant factories just so they can sit idle in case you someday need them. That's kind of a lousy business decision. So what happens next? Trump comes out this morning and he calls for a $1.5 trillion with a T defense budget for 2027. And, for those who don't get down with the defense budget numbers, that's close to a 50% increase in defense spending in 2027. Hey, anybody remember back in January of last year when we were talking about cutting spending? Remember all that? Oh, wasn't that fun? Wasn't that hilarious when for like a month we all pretended like defense spending and spending in general might actually come down someday? That was just adorable. A 50% increase in defense budgets. And of course, defense contractors rocketed on that news, even higher than they started yesterday when President Trump started this whole slew of comments. So what is the president telling them? On one hand, he's saying yesterday, beating them over the head, build my factories or no dividends, no buybacks, no executive pay for you. And then a day later, he says, if you build it, we're going to buy this stuff. Here is my call for a $1.5 trillion defense budget, which he probably won't get, right? If he's asking for 1.5, maybe he gets 1.2, but he's still asking for it. He's telling the defense industrial complex, if you build it, we will come. Now, what is all of this leading up to? Take all of this in the context of the U.S. government taking stakes in Intel, the U.S. government taking stakes in these rare earth companies, the smelter in Tennessee that we talked about earlier this week, steel and aluminum tariffs, right? All of these stories, you can see it. The takeover of Venezuela with the oil there. There is a transition happening to a wartime economy, and it is happening rapidly. And, you know, I've been saying, everybody's like, oh, can we do this? The constitutionality of this and the legality of this. And look, guys, during good times, I am right there with you. But here is the unavoidable fact. And these unavoidable fact, these inconvenient catastrophes on the horizon that force us to make very difficult decisions. And I'm not saying I know what the right one is. I don't. But I can tell you this fight is coming. And it's coming in 2027. The whole world is gearing up for it. It is not going to be pretty. I can tell you, you think the first 5 years, 6 years of this decade have been great? Just wait until you see 2027. They're putting the pieces in place. You can see it coming here. Now, while all of that is going on, we had this other heavy-handed issue going on economically yesterday. President Trump made the unusual move. He threatened to ban institutional investors from owning homes. And the crowd goes wild. Oh, my God. President, yeah. Oh, everybody was so happy. We're going to ban institutional investors from owning homes. Wall Street shouldn't be outbidding millennials for homes. Yeah, it's great. You know, just kind of a very decidedly liberal move from a supposedly conservative president. And it tested very well. There was a very positive reaction to this. And I'm sure it went over really well in focus groups. Hey, do you think big Wall Street titans should be able to outbid young families for single family homes? Well, when you phrase it that way, everybody is in favor of it. This is a unanimous, almost unanimously popular choice. Let me rephrase it, though. Let me ask you this. Should the government be able to decide who is allowed and who is not allowed to buy a house? Oh, well, when you phrase it that way, it's a slightly different outcome, isn't it? Maybe that doesn't poll so well in focus groups. I am not a big fan of Blackstone. Blackstone could go bankrupt, and I would probably just, you know, wonder what kind of sandwich to make. That being said, government deciding who gets to and who doesn't get to buy homes, nope, that doesn't fly with me. If you really want to get Wall Street out of the single-family home business, refuse to bail them out when that business goes south, and it will go south. Better yet, if you're really serious, if you really want affordability, if that's really a priority of yours, stop inflating the housing market. The housing market will correct. The prices will fall dramatically if the government stops holding them up through all of these cockamamie schemes that they use to pump liquidity into the housing market. Better yet, if you really want housing prices to fall, order the Federal Reserve to sell mortgage-backed securities. Congress could do that. Congress could pass a law and the president could sign it into law, ordering the Federal Reserve to, over whatever span of time, to reduce their holdings of mortgage-backed securities to zero. But they won't do that. They won't do that because they want their asset bubble. They want to keep those prices elevated, but they also want to dangle these little red herrings in front of the cameras to placate the angry mobs so hopefully they turn out and vote. They're not really serious about home affordability. And so everybody's cheering this decision. They think it's a great idea. It's actually a terrible idea, especially once the carve-outs start, because you know even if they do this, they're just going to say, oh, unless your firm does this, 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 and this, and there's only just one firm that happens to be run by my best friend that meets those qualifications, they'll start the carve-outs right away as soon as they get this done, if they get it done. So before you cheer that, really think about the second and third hand effects of a ban on investors buying houses. Also going on this morning, NVIDIA is supposedly about to be cleared by the Chinese to sell H200s into China. That is according to a person in a place who said a thing, of course, all anonymously sourced. The Chinese are expected to allow their private firms that are not involved in any critical infrastructure or defense to buy H200 GPUs, which is the Hopper. That's two generations ago GPUs. I'm not so excited about this news. It's anonymously sourced like everything. The market, the press is trying to make a big deal out of it. It's like front page news and Bloomberg and CNBC. The stock market doesn't care. NVIDIA stock was up a fraction of a percent on this news. So I don't think that's that big of a deal. We've got a stampede, meanwhile, a stampede of companies suing the government for tariff refunds. And this is because we're expecting a decision from the Supreme Court on the constitutionality of tariffs very soon here. And if those tariffs are struck down, everybody wants to be in line to get their money back. Pay attention to that one. We may be hearing about that in the next few days. We've also got a whole bunch of economic data came out. We had JOLTS was bad. Challenger was good. ISM services was good. The trade deficit just shrank to the smallest level since 2016. Slamming shut the trade deficit. Undoubtedly, tariffs playing a role there. There's some good and there's some bad to that happening. We'll go over that. Blue Owl Capital. This is interesting. There is another stampede of investors pulling their money out of Blue Owl Capital's business development company, one of their private credit funds that focuses in tech, in particular in artificial intelligence. 17% redemptions will be allowed in this fund because everybody wants their money back. You hear that AI bubble bursting? I can sure as heck hear it. And last but not least, President Trump also said this morning that Venezuela will buy only American products with the money from the oil that we allow them to sell. That's pretty heavy-handed there, any way you look at it, guys. I mean, that's pretty heavy-handed. Yeah, I'm all about like the Buy American thing, but wow, they're really throwing their weight around there, aren't they? Guys, we've got a lot to talk about this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget the like button. And you new guys, hit the subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every single day. And right now the S&P 500 is down about 7 points, 0.11%. No big moves this morning in the S&P. The Dow, meanwhile, is heading lower by 186 points or 0.38% to the downside. And the NASDAQ is also red, down 42 points or 0.16%. So not a big move, but down across the board in the indexes this morning. The dollar is a little bit higher here, up by 14 basis points, 98.89 on the U.S. dollar. That's going to put some downward pressure on asset prices this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year Treasury, 4.856%. That is up 4 basis points. The 10-year yield, 4.183%, also up 4 basis points. The 2-year yield, up 2 points and change, 3.492. And the 1 month is unchanged at 3.611. So yields moving a little bit higher this morning. Not a huge move in bonds, but we are seeing them move higher. Probably a reaction to those calls for a huge increase in defense spending that will ultimately be paid for by more borrowing and probably eventually more money printing, but we haven't gotten to that point yet. So people are saying, I want more interest. Or maybe they're saying we anticipate liquidity problems. If the government's going to borrow all this money, there may not be enough money to borrow. So they're starting to ask for a higher interest rate. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are red again this morning. Gold is at $4,422 for spot gold. That's off by $34 or about 0.75%. February COMEX gold futures, 44.30, also down by about 32 bucks or 0.72% lower. Spot silver is selling off again. It had a pretty big sell-off yesterday from the 80s down to the mid-70s, adding to those losses this morning. 74.14, down by 4 bucks or 5.2%. March COMEX silver futures, 73.79, still in backwardation by about 35 cents versus the spot market. For those March COMEX futures, they're down by $3.90 this morning or 5% lower. And again, guys, it's important to keep this in context. Two things. Number one, selling off hard all the way down to $73. Put yourself in the position you were in about 8 months ago. What would you think about a brutal sell-off all the way down to $73? So silver still looking really good here versus a few months ago. And also a 5% move lower in silver. And this is a relatively calm morning compared to some of the big 10% swings that we've seen over the last few days. Metals markets remain a mess. But you know what? Either way, guys, I like the shiny. Let me just add one more thing. Be very careful who you listen to. Be very careful what you read. And always ask yourself, what are the interests of the person you're reading? I still see a lot of phony BS being thrown around by people with a conflict of interest in the silver space, all intended to scare you into buying. And now look, I own a lot of metal. I'm still long metal. I haven't bought since $60, but I'm also not exactly selling here either. All I'm saying, guys, is be careful. Prices have gone vertical. They're getting very volatile. And there's a lot of people that are out there trying to take advantage of that, trying to get retail investors to pile into physical metal using outright false information. That's sleazy in my opinion, and I hate to see it. Also, we've got copper is lower by 2%. Platinum is lower by 2.6%. Palladium is down by 1.5%. Metals are red across the board this morning. But oil's a little bit higher here. $1.08 higher, almost 2% to the upside. $57.08 for WTI crude. Once again, the prospects of new Venezuelan oil supply hitting the market are not having any effect on the price of oil. Keep an eye on that one. Bitcoin is having its second bad day in a row, 89,741 for Bitcoin. Let's zoom in a little bit here on these last few days. Bitcoin had a really good week last week. We traded from down in the mid-80s up to the mid-90s. Now we're actually in our third day of sell-off. We put in a top on Tuesday, and we've had two big red days in a row, but still kind of like in this band that we've been in since the middle of November here. Again, I expect Bitcoin to break down from this level and head sharply lower over the next, we'll say, 11 months or so. All right, here's the big one. We've got Trump says he will not permit dividends and stock buybacks for defense companies. This one hit midday yesterday, and this sent the defense companies sharply lower. President Trump on Wednesday said he will not permit defense companies to issue dividends or stock buybacks until those firms speed up their production of military equipment and address his other complaints about the industry. Trump, in a lengthy Truth Social post, also took aim at defense contractors' executive pay packages, calling them exorbitant or unjustifiable. Defense companies are not producing our great military equipment rapidly enough, and once produced, not maintaining it properly or quickly. Until those companies build a new production plants, no executive should be allowed to make in excess of $5 million, Trump declared, rather arbitrarily so. Again, like presidents can't really just pick numbers out of thin air and say you can't make more than this. That's not really how this is supposed to work, but let's move on. Shares of General Dynamics, which I own, Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, each fell 3% following Trump's comments. He later singled out Raytheon as the least responsive to the needs of the Department of War, the slowest in increasing their volume, and the most aggressive spending on their shareholders rather than the needs and demands of the United States military. It was not initially clear what impact or binding force, if any, Trump's announcements would have on major defense companies' financial activities. The White House didn't immediately respond to CNBC's request for additional information. That's because they don't really have any binding force. There is no legality behind this, but he can direct the Pentagon to withhold payment, or generally it's not a good idea to piss off a sitting president if you're a defense contractor and you're dependent on getting big military contracts. That being said, it's really doubtful that he could force this unless hypothetically he were to call for a big spike in defense spending. Fast forward by about 12 hours, defense stocks surge after Trump calls for $1.5 trillion military budget in 2027. All pretense of spending cuts has now been officially thrown to the wind. Global defense stocks rallied on Thursday, extending gains after President Trump called for a $1.5 trillion defense budget in 2027. After the long and difficult negotiations with senators, congressmen, secretaries, and other political representatives, I have determined that for the good of our country, especially in these very troubled and dangerous times, our military budget for the year 2027 should not be $1 trillion, but rather $1.5 trillion, he wrote on a Truth Social post. This will allow us to build the dream military, in quotes, that we have long been entitled to, and more importantly, that will keep us safe and secure regardless of foe. Unusual to see the dream military. He stopped using gold. I guess the golden army, the golden military, the golden dome, the golden fleet. No, we're going with dream now. Okay. But, you know, he's telling the defense contractors, hey, remember those factories that I threatened you if you didn't build them yesterday? Well, here's the carrot. If you do build them, I'm calling for a big bump in defense spending so that maybe those factories will have some business. Now, look at the reversal in the stocks. Lockheed Martin, the biggest name in the space, they were down 4.8% yesterday on that news of the threat, and now they're up 6.4% this morning on the news of a $1.5 trillion defense budget. Now, again, that $1.5 trillion, it's just a thing that was said on Truth Social. There's no paper behind it. There's no nothing. It's just that's the number he's going to ask for. He's going to push for more defense spending in 2027. Another name, Raytheon, one that he was actually singling out yesterday, down 2.45% yesterday, up 2.39% this morning. So Raytheon still down just a little bit versus where they started yesterday, but recovering almost all of those losses following President Trump's comments. Meanwhile, Trump threatens to ban Wall Street investments in single-family homes. Everybody was cheering this one yesterday. I really don't think this is the good news people think it is, and I think it's going to have a marginal impact on home prices, if any. U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday said his administration is moving to ban Wall Street firms from buying up single-family homes in a bid to reduce home prices, a potential blow for private equity landlords that also pressured home builder stocks. In a post on Truth Social, Trump said he was immediately taking steps to implement the ban, which he would also call on Congress to codify in law. It was not clear what steps he would take. Again, we're kind of overlooking the whole constitutionality of it all, but I digress. For a very long time, buying and owning a home was considered the pinnacle of the American dream, Trump wrote, adding that inflation had put that dream out of reach for many Americans. People live in homes, not corporations, said Trump, which is like almost verbatim what Xi Jinping said with his three red lines policy, but I digress. Who is under growing pressure to address voter anxiety over the cost of living ahead of this year's congressional midterm elections. A Republican move to target Wall Street landlords would perversely align the party with Democrats who for years have criticized corporate home buying, claiming it has helped stoke housing costs and have unsuccessfully pushed bills back to crack down on the trend. You know, guys, these Wall Street firms would not buy houses if they didn't have the implicit guarantee of the federal government that will bail you out if that bet goes sideways. If you really want to get these firms out of the housing business, stop giving them free printed money at our expense every time they make a stupid bet. And then they'll stop making stupid bets like piling into the housing market at all-time highs. They'll stop making those bets because they'll lose money doing it. Let them fail. That's the idea. That's my idea. Instead of inflating housing, let them fail. Let the prices go down as they naturally want to. Stop blowing into the bubble. Wall Street institutions such as Blackstone, American Homes for Rent, and Progress Residential have bought thousands of single-family homes since the financial crisis of 2008 and led to a wave of home foreclosures. By June 2022, institutional investors owned around 450,000 homes, or about 3% of all single-family rental homes nationally, according to a 2024 study by the Government Accountability Office. 3% of homes nationally, and honestly, that's one of the larger numbers that I've seen. Most of the numbers I've seen says that institutional investors own less than 1% of single-family homes. I think they're using the share of rental homes here to try to make that number appear bigger. Honestly, guys, they just don't own that many homes. They really don't. And this business, renting out single-family homes, is not a business that scales. It's actually very hard. Anybody who's ever rented a single-family home knows it's a pain in the ass, and there's actually a lot of risk involved, and it's certainly not something you can do from a central headquarters in a different time zone. So these bets will go south and they'll lose a ton of money if we let them. But instead, we're just going to say, no, we're going to ban them from buying them and then carve out all our buddies. Blackstone stock, though, sold off about 5.6% yesterday, trading at $153.59, down about $9 on that news. Meanwhile, China to approve NVIDIA H200 buying as soon as this quarter, says this anonymously sourced article. China plans to approve some imports of NVIDIA's H200 chips as soon as this quarter, according to people familiar with the situation, giving the company renewed access to a critical market. Chinese officials are preparing to allow local companies to buy components from NVIDIA for select commercial use, said the people who asked not to be identified because the deliberations are private. All right, so the Chinese might do a thing according to this person in a place who said a thing. That's the article here. Look, guys, Alibaba and ByteDance. Oh, wait, I missed an important detail. Hold on here. Well, let me get back to that important detail. Here we go. However, the H200 chip will be barred from the military, from sensitive government agencies, from critical infrastructure, and state-owned enterprises due to security concerns, they said. That mirrors similar measures that the Chinese government adopted for foreign products such as Apple devices and Micron chips. So this is interesting because that's kind of a loose definition. What is critical infrastructure? What constitutes military? What constitutes sensitive government agencies and state-owned enterprises? Because this paragraph kind of calls that into question. Alibaba and ByteDance have both told NVIDIA in private that they're interested in ordering more than 200,000 units each of the H200. That's, again, according to this person who said the thing. Both companies, alongside prominent Chinese startups like DeepSeek, are rapidly upgrading their models to compete with OpenAI and other U.S. rivals, but it's unclear what Beijing will view as critical infrastructure. Beyond the more obvious areas such as military or government networks, private sector firms like Alibaba and Baidu typically provide computing services to a swath of state firms and government agencies, much like Amazon and Microsoft work with U.S. federal bodies. So these companies that are talking about buying these 200,000 H200s, according to the guy who said the thing, they may not be able to because they sell compute to the government, and the government says you can't use these NVIDIA chips for government things. So the market's kind of shrugging this one off. Actually, look, NVIDIA stock is now down on this news. That's interesting. $189.07, down by about a nickel here. Stock's going nowhere on this one. By the way, full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, the stampede of companies seeking U.S. tariff refunds is growing. Costco and Goodyear Tire jumped into the legal fray for refunds, as have Dole, Fresh Fruit, and J.Crew. Guys, we can expect something from the Supreme Court in the days ahead, and all these companies are suing just in case. Companies are lining up in droves to possibly recoup their shares of tariffs paid to the U.S. government as the Supreme Court looks poised to rule on President Trump's signature economic policy. More than 1,000 companies, including Costco and Goodyear Tire, have jumped into the legal fight for refunds. Already in 2026, dozens more, including Dole, Fresh Fruit, and J.Crew, have joined the fray and sued, according to the latest Bloomberg Big Take. The Supreme Court can take many months to render decisions, but the tariff challenge to Trump's Liberation Day levies has been expedited given the huge stakes. If the court declares he unlawfully used his authority to put duties on imported goods, the justices are likely to kick the question of refunds back to lower courts. If the U.S. Court of International Trade, the primary forum for such fights, ultimately manages that process, any importer that wants its money back must sue. The administration had collected approximately $133 billion in duties under the emergency authority as of December 14th, according to its latest report. So, look, guys, the Supreme Court is poised to make a mess here. You could tell based on the tone of a lot of the judges in the hearings on this last year that a lot of the judges, even the conservative judges, were very skeptical of the tariffs. And so if this gets overturned, that raises the question of, okay, they've been overturned. What about the people who already paid? Do they get their money back? Why or end? If they do, how do they get their money back? And all of this in the context of, if the tariffs get overturned, President Trump is likely to just launch a whole bunch of 232 investigations on each individual sector and put them right back on after several months. So a lot of potential uncertainty. This could make a mess in the bond market. If the government has to refund that $133 billion, they probably have to borrow it. Pay attention. We'll probably get our answer within a couple of days here, or at least we'll get some answers. All right, we got a lot of economic data yesterday. Let's start with JOLTS, the job market. Not looking so good in this report. Job openings in the U.S. fell by 303,000 to 7.146 million in November, the lowest since September of 2024, and well below market expectations for 7.6 million. Guys, the job market not looking good here. This is the JOLTS job openings and labor turnover survey. All right, you can see here, this has just been trending down pretty much ever since the Fed started their tightening. They leveled off here, but we are slowly making lower lows. November hit 7.15 million, or is that number right? Yeah, 7.15 million, lowest in a long time. Even this is deceptive, guys, because there's a lot of fake job openings out there, a lot of postings that were put up, and they have no intention of ever filling them. But this remains a lousy job market. And let me just recommend Amanda Goodall, AKA the Job Chick, on Twitter, who has done an excellent job of documenting what a mess artificial intelligence has made in the job market. And I tell you guys, my heart goes out to any of you young guys, recent college graduates who are trying to find a job in this market. I cannot imagine what it's like, especially with the cost of living being what it is. All right, now that was the JOLTS number. That was pretty bad. Although we got Challenger job cuts this morning, and it actually wasn't that bad. There was a lot of layoffs in 2025, But at the end of 2025, things got a little bit better all of a sudden, and nobody really expected that. U.S.-based employers announced 35,553 job cuts in December of 2025. That's the lowest since July of 2024 and down from the 71,321 in November, 8% below the level from December a year earlier. The year closed with the fewest announced layoff plans all year. While December is typically slow, this coupled with higher hiring plans is a positive sign after a year of high job cutting plans, said Andy Challenger from Challenger Gray and Christmas. In 2025, employers announced 1.2 million job cuts. That was a 58% increase from 2024 and the highest total since 2020. It was an awful year for job cuts. You combine that with the jolts, you can see it's a lousy job market. But that being said, December wasn't all that bad. Now, you can see here, these are the monthly totals here. December, 35,600, down sharply from the 153,000 in October. Now, if we're looking at, let's say, a 10-year chart here, you can kind of see 2025, there was a lot of announced job cuts in 2025, especially early in the year, much more than 2024, which was more than 2023, which was more than 2022. You can see the pace of layoffs has been slowly increasing over the last 3 years. Obviously, 2020 was a mess because of the vid. It's kind of a lousy job market, but at the very least, that December number was encouraging. That's a good shoot there. And we actually got some encouraging data in the ISM services PMI yesterday as well. Earlier this week, we reported on the ISM manufacturing PMI, and that was dreadful, deeply negative. But services is looking a lot better here. The ISM services PMI for the U.S. increased for a third consecutive month to 54.4 in December of 2025. That is up from 52.6 in November and well above forecasts of 52.3. Remember, anything above 50 is expansion territory. Anything below 50 is contraction. So services are expanding and they're expanding faster. This is a good bit of data here amid a sea of otherwise red. The reading pointed to the strongest growth in services since October of 2024, with all sub-indexes in expansion territory for the first time since February. Companies frequently mention impacts related to the holiday season and activity increases related to end-of-year activity and preparation for 2026. Just like Craig Fuller mentioned in that interview we did a few weeks ago, there was a sudden surge of economic enthusiasm that nobody was expecting at the end of the year. It's reflected in this ISM services PMI, and it was reflected in those Challenger job cuts for December. Business activity and production was 56, up from 54.5. New orders, 57.9, up from 52.9. Inventories, up 54.2 from 53.4. There was a rebound seen in employment, 52 versus 48.9. New export orders, 54.2 versus 48.7. Imports were up 50.3 versus 48.9, and pricing pressures eased slightly, 64.3 versus 65.4. Now, that is still pretty bad there, guys. The pricing pressures in the 60s. That means the inflation is still running rampant in those who produce services, rising a little bit slower, but still a 64.3 read is a lot of price increases. But look, guys, the ISM services PMI, it bottomed out in May and it started to recover a little bit. So some green shoots in the economic data this morning. And one more good bit of data we got this morning. It's good by most measures. There's potentially some negative fallout here. United States balance of trade. Our trade deficit in the U.S. narrowed sharply to $29.4 billion in October of 2025, the lowest since June of 2009. Compared to a revised $48.1 billion gap in September and forecasts of a much larger $58.1 billion shortfall. Guys, the trade deficit got a lot better in October. Now, again, this is October. This data is delayed by quite a bit here. So I don't know why it's delayed. Is this maybe a function of the government shutdown, or are we always this much lagging? I don't know. But exports rose 2.6% to $302 billion, mostly due to a surge in sales of non-monetary gold and other precious metals. Aha, now I know what's going on here. I didn't need to catch that one. This was the flow of metal. That's why the trade deficit shrank. Remember in October, the big backwardation that we saw between London and New York and silver prices, and how the metal in London was like $3 more than the metal in New York, and all of a sudden they started loading silver onto planes and flying it to London. Well, that counts as an export. That's why the trade deficit shrank. Billions of dollars worth of bullion going to bail out London. Interesting. I didn't pick that up on my first read through. Exports also increased for travel and charges for use of intellectual property, while a decrease was seen in shipments of pharmaceutical preparations and government goods and services. Meanwhile, imports declined 3.2%, almost certainly because of tariffs, led by a big fall in pharma and, to a smaller extent, a decline in non-monetary gold and transport. On the other hand, purchases went up for computer accessories, telecommunications equipment, computers, travel, and insurance. All right, so that's going to be some positive GDP data. Remember, guys, GDP in the first quarter went deeply negative because we were importing a lot of gold and silver, expecting those tariffs that never came. Well, in October, that flow reversed. It went back over to Europe, and so the GDP numbers are going to go positive. This is going to make this is going to create some economic growth in the GDP reads, which, by the way, I have to give a shout-out to my friend Lakshmi Ganapathy. We're not going to get. I posted this interview with Lakshmi Ganapathy yesterday about the K-shaped economy and Unicus Research's 2026 look ahead. And one of the themes that Lakshmi called out in their look ahead for 2026 was data throttling, was the unfortunate trend of political influence in economic data, something I have observed for years. It's not just this administration. The last one did it, but this administration is doing it even more. And right as I'm publishing this video, which we recorded on Monday, by the way, we got this news from my friends over at MacroEdge. U.S. reschedules December personal income and PCE data to February 20th and reschedules GDP release to February 20th as well. Data throttling. Locks called it just 2 days before this happened. Her 2026, one of her predictions has already come true, and it's only the second week of January. Shout out to my friends at MacroEdge, and guys, check out that interview that I posted with Locks yesterday on my channel feed. All right, pay attention, AI bubble blowers. Look at this story. Blue Owl BDC allows 17% redemptions as investors storm the exits. Blue Owl, one of the biggest private credit funders of data center and AI startups in the country. Everybody wants their money back. That's very interesting. Blue Owl Capital is dramatically increasing the amount of money investors can pull from one of its private credit funds after being hit with a deluge of redemption requests last month. The firm is allowing investors in Blue Owl Technology Income Corp, a business development company, to withdraw as much as 17% of the fund's non-traded fund's net assets, worth about $685 million, well in excess of the 5% quarterly limit the firm had previously set, according to regulatory filings. It also amended the deadline for investors to redeem their shares to January 8th from December 31st. Typically, when funds are faced with redemptions above 5%, they will prorate, but we've prioritized the investor here because we have the flexibility with $2.4 billion of liquidity, said Craig Packer, co-founder of Blue Owl Capital, who's trying to project strength as there's a run on his fund. Now, maybe this is the AI bubble bursting, or maybe this is just investors who got spooked after Blue Owl tried to screw them over last quarter. Blue Owl, one of the first asset managers to adopt the business development company structure, has faced some scrutiny of late, particularly in November after it pulled a planned merger of two of its private credit funds that could have forced investors in a non-traded fund to swallow losses of around 20%. The non-traded vehicle Blue Owl Capital Corp. II had seen a surge in withdrawal requests above the 5% limit. Prior to the attempted merger, Blue Owl honored about $60 million or 6%, but has since stopped allowing investors to pull out cash. The manager has said it would reinstate redemptions this quarter. So this is a different private credit fund that was managed by Blue Owl. They tried to screw over their investors. Now the investors in this other fund want their money back. And notice the name of the fund, the Blue Owl Technology Income Corporation. All right. That is a private credit fund that loans money to tech startups. Within that space, the biggest demand for money, of course, is data centers and AI companies. 17% requesting withdrawals. 17% that are going to be allowed, which means the requests were even higher than that. Guys, that AI bubble, it is bursting as we speak. People just haven't figured it out yet. Blue Owl Capital down about 0.45%, down about a nickel here. They were also down about 2.5% yesterday on this news. But the stock's holding up all right here at $15.50. And last but not least, Trump says Venezuela will purchase American products with revenue from the oil deal. Look, Venezuela, you're going to sell oil only the people we approve of. And with the money you get from that, you're going to buy our stuff. So that's pretty much the story here. A very heavy-handed approach here. And again, guys, there's a lot has happened in the last couple of days that under normal circumstances, a lot of us might be like, is this legal? Are we allowed to do this? Is this right? Is this wrong? There is a brutal fight coming our way. I can see it coming. I hope I'm wrong about this. And honestly, like, moral and ethical dilemmas like this are a luxury when a fight like that is on the horizon. So you got to view everything through the lens of this is a wartime economy. Without a war, we're supposedly not at war yet, although missiles are flying on like a biweekly basis, but we're not officially at war yet. 2027, guys, watch out for that one. An increasing theme of this year. I hope I'm wrong about that. I'd love to be wrong. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Joel. I'm going to struggle to pronounce that. I'm just going to say Joel. Thank you, sir. He says, where is the best place to get spot prices? I can tell you the place I usually get spot from is on investing.com on their real-time commodities board. Here, I'll flash it on the screen. This is what I use for spot. And understand, you're right to point out what's the best place because it does change. All right. The XAG USD number on investing.com typically is the most up-to-date and most accurate, currently reading 74.51. I would tell you guys, compare your prices, especially when shopping online at bullion dealers, because one of the ways bullion dealers manipulate people is by raising spot price. And then when they advertise, they're like only 50 cents above spot. Well, they raise spot price, so they're making it look like more of a discount than it really is when the spot price they're advertising is significantly higher than the actual London spot price. So go by the absolute number when you're comparing prices at the bullion dealers, not by the percentage above spot or the number above spot or behind spot that they give you when they advertise to you. Very good question, Joel. That's where I get my spot number right there. And thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Mr. Four P's, thank you for being a Melonhead member for 16 months. He says, great interview yesterday. After tax season, I truly don't see how this economy continues to stay afloat. I see most stocks as risky, cars and homes overpriced, and employment is shaky. Your thoughts? Yes, I agree with all those points. Let me work backwards, though. Employment shaky. We did get some slightly encouraging news this morning, all right? That trade deficit manipulated by gold. The ISM services data looked pretty good, and the Challenger job cuts announcements looked pretty good. There was a sudden surge of optimism late in the Christmas season. We saw it in the logistics data with Craig Fuller. We saw it in the ISM services, and we saw it in the Challenger job cuts. So maybe the employment situation is about to improve. At least you can see hints of that in some of the data. That being said, the JOLTS number was pretty bad yesterday, so there's plenty of bad news. Tomorrow, we've got that non-farm payrolls coming in, so we'll see what we get there. Look, that is a very important one, by the way. That's going to move markets tomorrow one way or another. Homes overpriced. Abso-freaking-lutely. Absolutely, homes are overpriced. The government doesn't want home prices to fall because when home prices fall, people consume less. The wealth effect. People feel less wealthy when their homes go down in value, and so they tighten up their wallets. So if homes are overpriced and homes start falling, the economy will shrink because people will consume less, and we are a consumer-driven economy. Risky, cars overpriced. Abso-freaking-lutely, cars are overpriced. That was also a theme in Lox's 2026 look ahead. The auto market, in particular, auto finance. Once again, going to plug that one. Stocks are risky. I agree. I have bought a few stocks in the last few months, only defense names. They're the only ones that I've bought. I generally view stocks as overpriced. I bought a lot of metals last year. I've made a couple of trades. I'm short a couple of names, obviously, but I'm not buying many stocks at these levels. Now, how does the economy stay afloat? Extend and pretend. That's how. I mean, there's just lying about what these assets are worth is how the economy has stayed afloat so far, right? Money printing, government borrowing and spending, extend and pretend. Maybe they can continue that for another year. Sooner or later, that bird comes home to roost. Is 2026 the year it happens? Well, I guess we're just going to have to find out. Thank you very much, Mr. Four P's, for supporting the channel and the Challenged Investor. Thank you for supporting the channel. He says, video with you, Bob Coleman, and Morgan Are we talking about David Morgan, perhaps, saying that would rock? That is not a bad idea. I'm going to put that one on the parking lot. By the way, guys, both of those names, I like both of those guys, David Morgan and Bob Coleman, are both friends of mine. Bob in particular is one guy, one of the reasons why I always have Bob on the channel when there is some kind of like thing, some ruckus happening in the markets, is Bob doesn't spin BS. Bob is not a hypester. Bob is a pragmatist and he is a realist, and he's very quick to call out BS when he sees it. And right now there is a lot of BS in the precious metal space, so just be careful. I like to see silver rising. I would be much more comfortable to see silver grinding higher by a couple of pennies every day versus shooting up $10 at a time. All right. When I see big green shoots like that, I get nervous because they tend to be followed by big red shoots. Thank you very much, Challenge Investor. That is a good idea, sir. And thank you for supporting the channel. Steve Woitis says, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says the USA 10-year bond has been stuck in a tight range for 3 months now and can't break 4.2%. What is the bond market telling us here? All right, the interesting thing, Steve, about the 10-year right now is the government is manipulating the 10-year by not issuing much of them. The government is borrowing a ton through Treasury bills. They're issuing the short-term stuff because they know there's not a lot of demand for the long-term stuff. And so that if you increase the supply, you lower the price and the interest rate goes higher. So instead of issuing 10s, 20s, 30s, they're issuing 1 month, 2 month, 3 month. And we can already see the stress building there because the Federal Reserve decided last FOMC meeting, we're going to start printing up to $40 billion a month to buy T-bills. So the Fed is already bailing out the bond market because we're not issuing the long-dated stuff. We're issuing too much short-dated stuff, and the Fed has to buy it in order to keep rates stable. They're worried about a liquidity crisis. So the reason why the 10 has been stuck in this range is because the government has their fingers on the scale. Keep an eye on that. And by the way, that is something that Bessent has done, and Bessent is not the only one to do it. Janet Yellen did it, all right? Bessent, you know, Trump and Bessent and myself, we all criticize Yellen for the over-reliance on T-bills, and since Bessent has gotten in, he's done it even more. So it's just another example of no matter who wins in the elections, the result tends to be the same. More ZERP and more Burr every time. It just smells a little different. Thank you, Steve, for supporting the channel, sir. Metal Seer, thank you for being a melonhead for 11 months. Says, is U.S. militarization emulating the Roman Empire? Well, I can tell you currency debasement to fund military activities stretching way too far beyond your borders was one of the eventual causes of the downfall of the Roman Empire, wasn't it? Is it emulating the Roman Empire? Yeah. Yeah, we emulate the Roman Empire in a lot of ways. Absolutely. The historical parallels are all there. Guys, this, again, I hope I'm wrong about this, but I really think this fight is coming. I mean, the Chinese sure are acting like it's coming. And again, it's for once, it might be a war that we don't start. It might be coming, and we may not have a say in whether or not it happens. So thank you very much, Metal Seer. Good analogy, sir. Kevin DiBella, thank you for being a melonhead for 10 months. He says, great video on the K-shaped economy yesterday, sir. Thank you very much, Kevin, but I can't take credit. That all goes to Lox. That was her 2026 look ahead that she was nice enough to share with me, the themes she's expecting for this year. And already one of them, we're just 8 days into this year, and data throttling already proven right. Pretty good, Lox. Thank you very much. Shout out to Unicus Research, and thank you, Kevin. Richard Bell, thank you, sir. He says, well, will they ever open Fort Knox doors? I think we got our answer, didn't we? We were all, you know, I haven't even heard Rand Paul talk about Fort Knox in a while. I think we got our answer there. No, we are not going to see what's in Fort Knox. No, we will not. We'll talk about it, you know, kind of like the list that doesn't exist. We'll talk all about it, but we'll never see it. Abso-freaking-lutely. Good point, Richard Bell. Thank you for supporting the channel. Hunt and Cover says, here's some money for coffee or the jukebox. Have a good day, Jack. All right, we're taking requests for the jukebox. What should we play? Should we throw a little smooth operator on there, maybe? I don't know. We'll see what we're feeling. Although I'm feeling a little AC/DC this morning. I could use some hard-hitting power chords here. I don't know. Let me know in the comments, what should we use Hunt and Cover's jukebox money for, or should I just pump some more caffeine into the veins? Either way, thank you very much, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. KDM28 says, Venezuela taking the lead over DC and PR for 51st state. PR in reference to Puerto Rico. Hey, let's not forget Canada, who is the dark horse in that race to the 51st state. And we also got Guam we could throw in there. Sure, why not? And Greenland. Greenland is in the race. Man, we're going to have like five different 51st states, aren't we? It's like James K. Polk, 5440 or fight round two. Thank you very much, KDM, for supporting the channel. Tom Dillon says 7450 for silver. That crushes it all the way back to the all-time high from December 26th. Yeah, exactly. Hair on fire. What does AI Chinese guy have to say about this? Probably a whole bunch of BS. And the question is, what does nobody special have to say about AI Chinese guy? Might have to wait a few more days for that one. But we're digging. We will find it. I will find you. I have a very unique set of skills. Yes. Thank you very much, Tom Dillon. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads. Appreciate all the super chats and the generosity. Also, you two, you magnanimous Melon Heads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. I'm Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small and dream big.